The Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival is back. Still Moon Arts Society is proud to announce the 22nd annual Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival. A fusion of art, nature and community, this month-long festival celebrates the Harvest Moon, Still Creek, local art and the diverse cultural traditions of the Renfrew Collingwood neighbourhood. Attendees can expect dazzling lanterns, live music, dance, food, art and nature workshops and community performances, all including making salmon lanterns, mooncakes and guided tours. Connect with the local nature as a community to raise awareness and bring positive change to restore Renfrew Ravine to its natural beauty. Learn more and register at stillmoonarts.ca.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The civil defense came to put out the fire, and the Israeli forces did not let them through. We broke down the bathroom window and got out. My wife's shoulder and arm was burned. Thank God it only came to that. They did not give us any prior warning or anything. I do not know why they treat us like this.
Israel's largest military operation in the occupied West Bank in decades continues. At least 18 Palestinians have been killed. We'll go to Jenin, where Israeli forces have raided the city, but first to Gaza, where at least 68 Palestinians have been killed in the last 24 hours in Israel's continuing assault. Then Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rules out any ceasefire as Russia continues its largest aerial assault since the invasion.
There can be no compromises with Putin. Dialogue today is in principle empty and meaningless because he does not want to end the war diplomatically. He does not want it. He pretends to be ready for a diplomatic way, but under the condition of giving him 30% of our land.
We'll also look at the International Atomic Energy Agency's warnings of a nuclear catastrophe at the aging Russian Kursk nuclear plant. Zaporizhia in Ukraine is also vulnerable. And in Afghanistan, the Taliban approves a law banning women from speaking in public.
I think this new law of the Taliban further restricts the rights and freedom of women and completely erase them from the society. Even silence their voice, and they cannot get out of the house without male member of their family.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli attacks have killed at least 68 Palestinians and wounded 77 others over the past 24 hours. An attack just hours ago on displaced people in Khan Yunis killed or injured more than a dozen people, mostly women and children. Another attack on Rafah killed at least seven Palestinians. The mother of Gaza's first confirmed polio patient, Abdulrahman Abuljidian, a nearly one-year-old boy who is now paralyzed, is speaking out and pleading for medical treatment. This is Naveen Abuljidian.
I was shocked that my son got this disease amidst the war and the closure of border crossings. Under these conditions and lack of medicine for him, it's a shock. Would he remain like this? For how long? Is there a treatment for him? Is there someone to treat him? I don't know what to do. I took him to the hospital. They told me that my son has polio and they cannot treat him. They cannot do anything for him. He is my only baby boy. It's his right to travel and be treated. It's his right to walk, run and move like before. It's his right to get the proper treatment, travel, get out and get his chance in life.
The World Food Program has suspended all staff movement across Gaza after Israeli soldiers opened fire on one of its vehicles, hitting it 10 times. The vehicle was clearly marked as belonging to the United Nations and was part of a convoy that the UN had coordinated with the Israeli military. This is UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric.
I think after this conflict is over, and we hope it's over much sooner than later, there will need to be accountability. There will be boards of inquiry to look at the destruction of UN property, the death of UN personnel, notably our security colleague.
The UN Security Council is meeting today to discuss the humanitarian crisis and the delivery of aid in Gaza. Israel's continuing its largest raids on the occupied West Bank in decades. Overnight, the Palestinian death toll rose to at least 18 as Israeli forces pushed into Jenin, Tul Karam, and the Farah refugee camp near Tabas with armored vehicles, bulldozers, fighter jets, and drones. More than 30 people have been injured since Israel launched the raids Wednesday. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad confirmed the commander of its armed wing was killed in the Nur Shams camp. We'll go to guests in Gaza and Jenin for more after headlines. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, warned that Israel's incursion in the West Bank must not be, quote, the premise of a war extension from Gaza, unquote, amidst fears Israel's preparing to annihilate another Palestinian territory. Borrell said he asked European Union members about possible sanctions on Israeli ministers who've called for the destruction of the West Bank and the Palestinian people.
Some Israeli ministers has been launching hate messages, unacceptable hate messages against the Palestinians, and proposing things that goes clearly against international law and is an incitation to commit war crimes.
Ireland accused Israel of deliberately targeting civilians and said it supported EU sanctions. This comes after Israel's foreign minister, Israel Katz, wrote of the West Bank invasion, quote, "We need to deal with the threat exactly as we deal with terror infrastructure in Gaza. This is a war for everything, and we must win it." Meanwhile, Egypt has rejected any Israeli presence along its border with Gaza, including the Rafah border crossing and the Philadelphia corridor. Israel's military presence in the Philadelphia corridor has become a point of contention in ceasefire talks, which Cairo has been hosting. In other related news, Namibia has blocked a vessel suspected of carrying explosive weapons to Israel from docking at its ports. Rights groups had warned Namibian officials that allowing the vessel to dock could implicate Namibia in potential human rights violations. The Biden administration's rebuffed the prospect of resuming nuclear talks with Iran after Tehran expressed its willingness to return to the negotiating table. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, gave Iran's new president, the reformist Masoud Pezeshkian, the okay on Tuesday to relaunch talks with Washington. But a U.S. State Department spokesperson told reporters shortly after the news, quote, "We are far away from anything like that right now," unquote. A Hong Kong court has convicted two editors of a pro-democracy newspaper of sedition. The landmark verdict against journalists with The Stand newspaper was swiftly blasted by press freedom groups. Reporters Without Borders called on Hong Kong authorities to, quote, stop its nefarious campaign against press freedom, unquote. The Stand was one of the last pro-democracy publications in Hong Kong before it was raided by police and forced to shut down in 2021 amidst Beijing's mounting crackdown on Hong Kong's autonomy. In Beijing, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met with Chinese President Xi Jinping today, capping off a rare 3 days of talks between a Biden administration official and Chinese leaders. The U.S. and China have agreed to hold more military talks and said a call between President Biden and Xi Jinping will be planned in the coming weeks. A top Chinese military officer also asked Jake Sullivan during a meeting to end U.S. quote-unquote collusion with Taiwan, over which China claims sovereignty. Honduras has vowed to end its extradition treaty with the United States after the U.S. ambassador denounced Honduran officials and implied they were working with drug traffickers. The U.S. accusation came after Honduran Defense Minister Jose Manuel Zelaya met with his Venezuelan counterpart, Vladimir Petrino, who was indicted by the U.S. on drug trafficking charges in 2020. This is Honduran Foreign Minister Enrique Reina.
International relations must be based in mutual respect, in dialogue, and not meddling and trying to impose policies, no matter the other state's positions, based on its interests. They cannot force another country to take the positions they want and must respect Honduras's stance.
The U.S. has long supported narco-traffickers in Honduras, most famously former President Juan Orlando Hernandez, who received unconditional U.S. backing during his rule, but was extradited in 2022 to the United States and in June of this year sentenced to 45 years by a U.S. court. In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott said Monday his state has removed more than a million people from the voter rolls since the 2020 election. About half of those people who've died or moved out of Texas. The remainder include hundreds of thousands who failed to update voter registration information after changing addresses. About 6,000 were stripped of their right to vote due to a felony conviction. Another 6,500 people were moved from the voter rolls after they were labeled non-citizens. A coalition of voting rights groups, including the Texas Civil Rights Project and the ACLU, warned in a letter to election officials, quote, Texas may be engaging anew in unlawful purges under the guise of list maintenance, unquote. The groups also say Republican elections officials purge voter rolls within 90 days of an election, a violation of federal law. And in labor news, unionized workers at Cornell University celebrated reaching a tentative agreement with the Ivy League school after less than 2 weeks on strike. The deal, which will benefit maintenance and dining room staff, gardeners and custodians, includes historic pay increases of up to 25%, cost of living adjustments, and ending a two-tier wage system. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. In Gaza, at least 68 Palestinians have been killed and 77 wounded in the last 24 hours, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Nearly 11 months into Israel's war on Gaza, the toll now stands at more than 40,600 Palestinians killed and nearly 94,000 wounded, though the true casualty figures are expected to be much higher, with thousands unaccounted for. As Israel's daily bombardment continues, the humanitarian crisis is only deepening. The World Food Program has announced it's pausing the movement of all staff in Gaza until further notice after Israeli forces shot at one of its clearly marked vehicles as it was moving toward an Israeli military checkpoint. The UN Food Agency said the vehicle was shot despite receiving multiple clearances by Israeli authorities to approach. The UN Food Agency said the incident was a, quote, stark reminder of the rapidly and ever-shrinking humanitarian space in the Gaza Strip. This comes just 2 days after the UN's humanitarian efforts in Gaza virtually ground to a halt due to new Israeli evacuation orders that forced the shutdown of the main UN operations center in Deir al-Balah. The UN's main humanitarian aid hub, with warehouses and accommodation for staff, had already been relocated once before in early May, following Israel's ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza. The new hub was set up in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza, but an evacuation order by the Israeli military on Sunday also included the new headquarters. Israel has issued several evacuation orders across Gaza over the past week, displacing a quarter of a million people in Deir al-Balah alone. The new orders also forced many families and patients to leave Al-Aqsa Hospital, the main medical facility in Deir al-Balah, where tens of thousands of residents and wounded were seeking shelter.
We go now to Gaza, to just outside the Al-Aqsa Hospital, where we're joined by journalist Akram Al-Sadri. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Akram. If you can explain the situation right now, the attention now is on the West Bank, but in the last 24 hours alone, 68 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza alone, with more than that injured.
Yes, Good morning to you, Amy, and to all viewers. Indeed, the situation in Gaza is ever escalating. The situation in the West Bank is marking a new beginning, where Israeli occupation forces are using the very same tactics of destruction and devastation, and also besieging the hospitals and the other infrastructure for the sake of, just as they said, for the sake of preventing the movement of the armed people. But indeed, that brings more devastation to the infrastructure and more devastation to the civilian population. In the Gaza Strip, 68 Palestinians were killed in the last 24 hours. Around 21 Palestinians are killed since the morning as of today. And the number of Palestinians who are injured is also increasing. The number of military operations that have an aim of destroying residential blocks is increasing. The bombardment that is resulting from the ongoing operation destroying the residential blocks in Rafah area, in Khan Yunis area, in Deir al-Balah in Gaza Central area, Al-Burj, and also in Al-Zaytun area is also heard from all different parts of the Gaza Strip. Continuous military operations, continuous devastation, continuous targeting, and increased number of Palestinians affected by those ongoing operations, either by being killed or being injured, or by becoming displaced because of the new evacuation orders that were given to the Palestinians to move them from the humanitarian zone, to move them to the humanitarian zone that is also ever shrinking.
Akram, if you could describe the scale of these evacuation orders. Over 88.5% of Gaza is under evacuation orders. What's the impact of these evacuation orders on people who are in Gaza?
For you to better understand the situation, people are asked to move to areas that have no infrastructure whatsoever, that have no regular water supplies, that have no regular even garbage collection services, with the municipal services coming to a full halt. So you would be walking down the streets, seeing tents erected on the sides of the road, seeing tents erected on the open areas, no infrastructure, no even sewage, no water supplies, no electricity, no hygiene, and the people are living there. And all of the sudden, they are asked to move from the very same area that is very lacking to another area to start removing the tents and building the tents in some other area. People are asked to move to an area of around 11% of the Gaza Strip, to be more precise. And in those areas that are called the humanitarian zone, there is nothing that have to do or has to do with the humanitarian need. The humanitarian needs are not met, and people are exposed and vulnerable to extremely increasing risk of the bombardment. In those areas, people were erecting their tents, and they ended up being targeted and killed in those tents. In Al-Nus area in Khan Yunis, around 100 Palestinians were killed when the Israeli occupation forces targeted the whole area and then claimed to have managed to assassinate Mohammed al-Dayf, who is the commander general of Hamas military wing. People are, even when they're moving to a humanitarian zone, they are not receiving humanitarian services. The UN agencies and the other international agencies are also facing increasingly difficult situation because of the movement restrictions that have been taking place, because of the fact that they have always to redefine and replan for the sake of making sure that they can access the people and they can also make sure that their teams are safe. Their teams are not safe, the journalists are not safe, the medical teams are not safe, the international teams are not safe. And about every category, there is a list of incidents and of deaths and of injuries and of the destruction of the properties and the vehicles also when they were targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. So the bottom line, that the situation is overall unsafe, and the Israeli ongoing ground operations and aerial operations and the continuous targeting, including quadcopters and artillery fire and the F-16 and all the other kinds of the weapons in their arsenal, is making things more difficult for the Palestinians and making life in Gaza more unlivable.
Akram, under these conditions, if you could talk about the diseases that are so rapidly spreading in Gaza, including most recently polio.
Yes, some statements were made, and at least one case of poliovirus was already confirmed in Gaza for a child who's 11 months old, and the risk of the outbreak of that disease, given the very severe limitations on the movement of the international staff and also of the local staff, and also the impact of the ongoing operations on the primary health care centers that most of them are not functional anymore because of the bombardment. There were some also alarming percentages about the hepatitis A that has been widespread in the Gaza Strip, and around 1 million Gazans have already been infected with this hepatitis A that is extremely contagious and that is can be transmitted also through touching. The water is polluted, the food is polluted, no hygienic conditions, and the result of that is very big risks for the public health of the people in Gaza. And the concerns have already been voiced by the UNRWA, by other UN agencies such as the UNFPA, the UN Women Program, where women, children, and elderly people are bearing the brunt of that very lacking situation and of that ongoing bombardment. So people at large are affected by that. They're affected also by some digestive issues because of the quality of the water and the quality of the food and lacking to hygienic situation for also cooking the food. So overall, the situation is extremely risky and dangerous for all different categories of the Palestinian population. And if you need a soup in Gaza, if you need washing soap, or if you need even bleach to wash the clothes, you will not find it in Gaza. You will not find it in Gaza Central Area, in Khan Yunis, in Rafah, or even in Gaza City. People are suffering and people are denied the access to the very, very basic things that have to do with their life. They cannot clean themselves, they cannot clean their clothes, they cannot clean their houses or their tents, and they are left to face the exacerbating humanitarian crisis, and they are left to face those increasingly acute humanitarian needs without any help extended to them, because according to some of the international organizations, the Israeli occupation is not allowing the hygienic stuff into the Gaza Strip, and that exacerbates the problem of the Gazans.
Akram, we only have a minute to go. We do not take for granted that we're even able to speak to you in Deir al-Balah, in Gaza. Deir al-Balah itself has been under attack. 90% of Palestinians have been displaced at least once. How do you keep yourself and your own family safe?
Well, I'm one of the Palestinians who have been displaced. I've been displaced for around 12 times. It is something that makes you feel unsafe. This is something that makes you feel detached from your original habitat. This is something that makes you feel vulnerable. This is something that makes you fear an imminent death that is coming to you, something that I have seen with my eyes. I saw the bombardment. I saw the people getting injured. I saw the destruction of the homes of the people, and I saw people frantically trying to grab anything and run for the sake of just starting a new life anywhere else where they are in a situation that is extremely lacking. No one is promised tomorrow in Gaza. And I will conclude by quoting the UNRWA Commissioner General, who said, no one safe, no place safe. And that will still continue and remain like that if no solution reached, if no agreement concluded between all the parties. The situation is extremely catastrophic. I think sometimes I had the chance of being in Western countries. I had the chance of being in African countries, in China. I tell you, what we are living is inconceivable in the sense of everything that has to do with a normal life. We are extremely sure that we might not live for the next second, not for the next minute, but we still have to endure that, and we still have to chase life despite death, uncertainty, and destruction.
Akram al-Sathari, be safe. Thank you so much for being with us. Gaza-based journalist joining us from outside the Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. We usually break at this point, but because we're going to the occupied West Bank, to Jenin, which is under siege, we don't want to risk losing our next guest. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheh.
We turn now from Gaza to the occupied West Bank, where Israel has launched its largest military operation in over two decades, raiding four cities and refugee camps in the north simultaneously with hundreds of soldiers backed by armored vehicles, bulldozers, fighter jets, and drones. At least 18 Palestinians have been killed and 30 wounded. On Wednesday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on Israel to immediately end its military operation and strongly condemned the loss of lives, including that of children. Meanwhile, three leading Palestinian human rights groups issued a joint statement warning, quote, of even more escalated violence in the West Bank with the employment of tactics that mirror those used in Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza, particularly attacks on hospitals and healthcare facilities, and the use of excessive and indiscriminate force.
In Jenin, Israeli forces have surrounded the city, blocking exit and entry points and access to hospitals and ripping up infrastructure in the Jenin refugee camp. Jenin's been the target of frequent raids by Israeli forces, but this latest military operation is the largest since the Second Intifada 2 decades ago, when Jenin witnessed some of the worst violence of that period after Israeli forces invaded it in 2002, laid siege to the refugee camp, killing dozens of civilians, destroying hundreds of homes, leaving a quarter of the population homeless. We go now to Jenin, where we're joined by Ahmed Tabassi, artistic director at the Freedom Theater in the Jenin refugee camp. Welcome to Democracy Now! Ahmed, describe the scene in Jenin right now.
Thank you, Amy, for having me. I mean, the scene, it's the same again and again, but as I said before, the Israelis keep being surprising us, even the way they do the invasions. To be honest, I am calling my sisters around, some friends, and they are very scared. We all of us very scared. We know there is something different in this invasion. The way they start the invasion, the way they doing it now, it's really scary. People don't know what's going to happen. It looks like it's going to be a bit more longer invasion than others. We are surprised of the number of the soldiers, the vehicles that keep coming to the city. The camp now having sometime electricity, sometime not. For sure, the internet is not there. We try to use the 3Gs and not totally always good. But yeah, it's a fear atmosphere where everybody is waiting. And, you know, the scenes from Gaza, what happened to Gaza, the people in the camp are really afraid that gonna happen to them, because it's obvious the Israelis punishing the people, punishing the civilians. In the camp, all camp is surrounded with the army. All the entrances are closed. They already bulldozed all the streets, all the alleyways in the camp. And even the bulldozing is really deep. That means no cars, no ambulances can go inside. Many people try to evacuate the camp, but for sure it's very dangerous, because if you are a man above 15 or 14, you could be shot if you are moving or you try to sticking out from the camp. Only maybe a kids or some women, if they are courage enough to leave, to know what's going on outside the house, to leave the camp, but no one allowed is to move. People are afraid of having no food now for 1 week, because, you know, they didn't prepare themselves for the invasion. They didn't know which kind of the invasion is this. And, you know, the Israelis do not announce what they're going to do exactly. So many people are really afraid for the kids, they having no food. So, yes, you hear the drones very close, the vehicles all around, the bombing by time to time. It's again the scene repeating itself again and again. And we don't know, like, what is the end, how long, what we should do. And it's obviously the Israelis want to tell the communities, the civilians of these areas, you have only two choices. You die here, or you leave, or displace to other country. And that's what is we still waiting what's going to happen in the next days.
So, Ahmed, if you could put this latest military operation in the context of the ongoing assault on Gaza on the one hand, and also the situation that's been developing in the West Bank, both with the increasing violence over the last 10 months since the Israeli assault on Gaza, as well as the exponential increase in the number of Israeli settlements there.
Yes, I mean, also at the same time, I hope American language and American, let's say, journalism start using the definition in a right way. It is not violence. It's a genocide from the Israeli army against the Palestinian people. It's not a conflict. It's a genocide, a war, ethnic cleansing from the Israeli military to the Palestinian civilians. And yes, it's to be honest, from 100,000 of settlers to 850,000 in West Bank. West Bank is not anymore a West Bank. It's a little fragment from Palestinian communities living there and there. And all the connection, all the network, the streets, all controlled by the settlers. I promise you, I experienced a death threat. One time I was trying to go back from Ramallah to Jenin. It's not even late. It's the evening. And suddenly we find ourselves surrounded by settlers who really clearly want to kill you. And we, the last second, we just run with the car. And if we just stopped, they are ready to kill you. They are attacking everywhere. They are putting fire in the houses of the people. They're shooting now. They have guns, officially permitted guns from the Israeli government being given to the settlers to shoot Palestinians.